Stevie Ray Vaughan bringing us back here on this Wednesday. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. And as we do at this time every Wednesday, we say hello to the great John McClain down in Houston. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. I want to read a quote. You may have seen this already, but we were talking about it. Some Titans fans on Twitter a little upset about comments of former running back Derrick Henry, but he said this yesterday. It definitely brings a different aspect because he is a dual threat quarterback and he's dangerous with his legs just as he is his arm. It's going to be fun and a breath of fresh air not being the center of attention, knowing that eyes are going to be on him as well. But I'm just excited to get to work, put the work in out here, and let it all come together. Obviously talking about Lamar Jackson and no longer having to be the center of attention for the offense as he was here with the Titans. What do you think about Henry's comments?
Well, I did see that, and first of all, he's got to say something like that about Lamar Jackson, two-time MVP, and he never played with a quarterback like that with the Titans. But he probably should have, as far as the breath of fresh air, not being basically the number one guy. And he's probably saying that for the Ravens fans because he knows he's not going to be the number one guy. The number one guy is Lamar Jackson. So I don't think he was saying it insulting to the Titans fans, but trying to say uplift the Ravens fans because that's his new team's team. And a lot of times when guys sign with other teams, they say things like that the team's fans will be insulted. And that happens quite a bit because you're trying to tell your new team how great everything is and people look. Here. So I could see Titans fans being upset a little bit, but based on everything he gave to that organization, I'd let it go in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's what we were talking about, and I think most Titans fans probably will, but you're right. I mean, he's got to comment on where things are now. So OTA's wrapping up here in Nashville with the Titans. How have things looked down in Houston with the Texans?
Well, they finished last week because they're in the Hall of Fame game against the Bears, Houston and Chicago. Finished first because they report first. In fact, I forgot about that. Scheduled several things out of town and then realize, oops, they're going to be there. And they report, I think July 17th is their first practice. But as you can imagine, with coming off the season they did, with so much attention on them, Stroud going into his second year, Stephon Diggs being here, some of the moves they made, free agency, Danico Autry, Danielle Hunter, people are really excited.
We're talking to the great John McClain on the Chase and Big Joe show. And John, again, we got more drama with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. He skipped a mandatory two-day mini camp, and now all the questions, you know, Robert Saleh's having to deal with all that's going on. My thing is, John, the head coach said there was an event that was important, Aaron, he had to be at, whatever. But it's just 2 days, John. And after what he did last year and, the injury, just come back and show that you want to be there. I'm not sure Aaron Rodgers wants to be there. It's just – it's a bad optic, John.
Joe, it is a bad optic, especially when you're the leader of the team. Now, Saleh should have handled it a whole lot better. He just said – Aaron has an excused absence for personal reasons, and he's been here in an off-season program. He'll be here for training camp, and we're excited about him and the team. Instead of saying it's unexcused and he'll be fine, I don't think Saleh handled that well at all. And if Rodgers and the Jets screw up, nobody's going to say, well, he should have been at the minicamp.
You're exactly right about that. I want to ask you ask you something, John, about it. It's more than football, sports. It transcends everything. Jerry West passed away this morning, and he's one of those rare figures, John, that is just, you think about Jerry West and what he meant to that sport. Your thoughts on Jerry West and just the impact he had throughout his life?
When I was a kid, I used to play basketball with the other kids in the neighborhood. At our house, we had a great setup in the backyard, in the driveway, and I always was Jerry West. That way I got to shoot a lot. And I met him one time, and I always thought he's such a class act, one of the greatest shooters ever. And it's a tremendous loss coming on the heels of losing Bill Walton 2 weeks ago. Just amazing.
John McClain here with us on the program as he joins every Wednesday at 9:30. John, you look at the Titans now, and Will Levis kind of had an up and down minicamp. Now, I have been saying to people, let's not judge everything in this new offense on minicamp, but you know how that goes. There's overreaction. So when they go into training camp, and you mentioned the Texans are going to be, you know, reporting early because of the Hall of Fame game, are the Texans right now the preseason clear-cut favorite in the AFC South, or do you believe that people should temper their expectations and maybe it's a lot more wide open than people might think?
I don't think that – well, I think people should temper their expectations, but also I think the division's going to be really tight, but with all the love the Texans are getting – I think they're the clear-cut favorite. I haven't seen anybody else mentioned as a possibility of being the team to win the division.
Is there concern in Houston, though, that like it could be like Jacksonville last year? You know, everybody was ready to anoint Jacksonville, and we saw what happened. Houston came on the scene. So is there some of that?
Well, there should be. Remember last year, Jacksonville was the consensus after winning the game over the Chargers with the great comeback, and everybody had them pegged. I lost a $100 bet on my talk show. I was offered Jacksonville or the field, and I took Jacksonville, and it cost me $100, which I paid up on the air. But it's amazing when you think about the Jaguars still had a winning record. They started well, and then they just dropped off the face of the earth. I'm still not exactly sure what happened to them, but it could happen to the Texans too. You know, the key they had, Trevor Lawrence has not played as well as he was expected to play as the generational quarterback. And that's where I'm sure they're struggling on the money to pay him, because he doesn't want to settle for less, but he hasn't earned it. And so the same thing could happen to the Texans. All it would take, a couple of injuries to somebody. But as long as you've got your quarterback, you've got a chance. And people are going to be gunning for C.J. Stroud. Defensive coordinators have had the whole offseason program to watch every throw he made, every play he was involved in, and they're going to have a different and better plan for him than they had last year.
John, Mike Tomlin signed an extension yesterday. The fact that the Pittsburgh Steelers have had three head coaches in 55 years, I'm not sure any other pro sports franchise has that. It's kind of surreal to think about that stat, John.
It's weird, Joe. I remember the Steelers were so bad when I was a kid, never thought anything about them other than the fact they were terrible. And then all of a sudden they hire a former line coach, Chuck Knoll, didn't think anything about it because they were so bad. And then he turned out to be a Hall of Fame coach and one of the best in history. And then when they hired Tower, I could see that because he had been at Cleveland. He had been at coach there, and then Kansas City, Marty Schottenheimer hired him there, and so he was prepared to be the head coach. Tomlin came out of nowhere. He had been a coordinator one season, everybody said their next coach to replace Cowher was going to be their offensive line coach, Russ Graham. And then the Rooney family interviewed Tomlin one time. And they interviewed him at one time and made a lot of media people like me look bad, who had been saying Russ Graham was going to be the next head coach. And whenever they do get around to hiring the fourth one, that guy's going to be under a lot of pressure.
There is no doubt. We will have more with John McClain coming up next here on the Chase and Big Joe Show, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, 1025-1063, The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 1025-1063, The Game on this Wednesday. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe, talking with John McClain down in Houston.
John, we had a lot of fun yesterday doing a trivia question about NFL quarterbacks and the last time an NFL team drafted a quarterback in the first round. We go back to 1971, the Saints drafted Archie Manning. But one that's often overlooked, a guy that had so much hype that the Seahawks took in 1993, Rick Meyer. Nobody, John, got that question correct about who Seattle took in the first round. What do you remember about Rick Meyer? What do you remember about quarterbacks who are like, this is the next greatest thing, because we're all talking about how great Caleb Williams is, but Rick Meyer got just as much hype back in 1993.
When Rick Meyer was at Notre Dame, everybody said he was kind of a golden boy, and then Drew Bledsoe kind of came out of nowhere in Washington State. And I will never forget Jerry Rome, who was assistant coach, offensive coordinator, quarterbacks with the Oilers, after studying them, told me that he thought Rick Meyer would not be successful in the NFL because he hadn't been accurate at any level. He said, there's things that you can improve on, but if a guy's not accurate, he said, I'm not saying it can't be done, but if the guy's not accurate in his college career, he's going to struggle to be accurate in the NFL. And he was exactly right. Seattle took him. He had one good season. And Seattle had problems with other quarterbacks. Kelly Stauffer, he was a wasted number one pick that they took. And but Meyer, big things were expected. Bledsoe went first overall. Bledsoe turned out to be great with the Patriots until he suffered an unfortunate injury.
John McClain here with us on the Chase and Big Joe Show, 1025 The Game. I was reading some, it's list season, and reading different things about biggest questions for first-year play callers at their current team. And Brian Callahan says, can the first-year head coach handle the juggling act? You've obviously seen this evolution of coaches, and Joe and I have argued about this, that teams still have offensive coordinators, but the head coach calls the plays. I don't really view it as much of a juggling act anymore. Do you, when a head coach is also the play caller?
Well, it's because so much goes on that you have to worry about. Clock management, decisions on first down. Now, in the past, the coach had all that on the – he made those decisions, and now they get a lot of help from experts that every team hires to help them, whether to challenge and – there's just so much on their plate. In 2006, Gary Kubiak was coming to Houston. And I did a story, went to Denver, and one of the people I interviewed was Mike Shanahan. And Mike told me, he said, Gary's going to find out like I did the hard way. He's going to want to do everything, including call plays. And then at some point, he's going to realize how much is on his plate, and he's going to pass on that responsibility like I did to him. And sure enough, Kubiak did that with Kyle Shanahan. And there's some that do it their whole career. Andy Reid, he runs everything. But Andy used to have all kinds of problems with clock management. And then he got Patrick Mahomes. Then they got a guy to help Andy out up in the booth. And now he's one of the greatest coaches in history. So Callahan will do it. You know, Zach Taylor did it. A lot of guys don't have a problem, but they have to listen on game days to the experts they have helping them. It'll make their job a lot easier so they can focus on the play calling.
Yeah, John, last week I got to host an event, as I told you, with Terry Bradshaw, and I said, hey, tell me about the time, you know, the immaculate reception. I said, what was that play call? What was going through everything? He's like, hey, don't forget, I made the call. I called my own plays back in the day. I called every play. And I asked, well, why does that happen today? And he's like, coaches don't want to give over that power to the quarterback. They want to have all that with, you know, make the call and do everything. Basically, they don't trust the quarterbacks. Are you surprised more quarterbacks don't call their own plays, or it's always kind of been this way?
No, the one who does would be Aaron Rodgers, which is probably one reason he likes his racket, lets him do whatever he wants. They said Tom Brady used to call a lot of the plays. They were sent in. He had the option to audible out anytime he wanted. Head coaches or whoever's calling the plays will give the quarterback options for audibles based on what they see as they approach the line of scrimmage. And the first one I can remember who called the plays was Tom Landry. And once Tom Landry did it and had success doing it, then others start to do it. And then eventually nobody did. When I started covering the Oilers, Dan Pastorini, Kenny Stabler, they call their own plays. And if you thought about telling them to do something, a head coach says, well, I want you to do this. If they didn't want to do it, by God, they wouldn't do it.
John, you know, as we kind of talk about this in play calling, you know, I look back and the last five head coaches to win the Super Bowl all have an offensive background. Obviously, Andy Reid has three of those, but you got Bruce Arians, Sean McVay. The last defensive-minded head coach was Belichick. When they beat the Rams in 2019. And going back in history, you know, a lot of coaches, they just were coaches. Maybe it was a little bit more of a defensive background, but, you know, you had guys that were just coaches. When did you see kind of the evolution of having coaches that had more of a specialty on the offensive or defensive side of the ball, and we kind of saw this separation where you had to have more of a specialist for each side of the ball and special teams?
If you have a head coach who's a defensive background, he's going to oversee the defense and he'll hire a coordinator to call the plays on offense. Same way on offense. Now, most former defensive coordinators will give up the play call on defense more than a head coach like Andy Reid will. Pete Carroll did it. You know, Bill Belichick did it. There have been some great defensive coordinators that have been great coaches and won Super Bowls. But, you know, it started with the play calling. I remember when the Oilers had Jerry Glanville, he did not have coordinators. He had guys that called the plays. Jerry called the defense. Jim Jones called the offense. But he didn't have them, the titles. And, you think about some of these old coaching staffs, they didn't have special teams coaches. They didn't have assistant position coaches. They didn't have – nobody knew what quality control was. But as the game became more special, and you had all these sub-packages, it's amazing how many assistant coaches – I haven't checked this, but I wonder which team has the most assistant coaches. And how much money are they sinking into that coaching staff? The Patriots had the smallest with Belichick.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's something we would have to look up for sure. John, appreciate it as always. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Guys, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much, as always.